Hi, I'm Sophia Rowe, chef and wellness enthusiast. Did you know that nearly 340,000, or one in five, New York City children rely on soup kitchens and food pantries to eat, especially during the summer months when school is out? The folks over at Food Bank for New York City want you to know that unlike school, hunger doesn't take a break. Help them end child hunger by providing meals to families and children in need during those challenging summer months. Visit foodbanknyc.org to learn how you can volunteer, spread the word, and more. Boys and girls are on fire. Boys and girls are on fire. Whole world's shaking, breaking, baby, and we're on fire. Boys and girls are on fire. Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, the number one female-focused food podcast in the universe. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Let's thank today's sponsors, Le Cordon Bleu Culinary Schools and Traeger Wood-Fired Grills. You folks are the bomb. Thank you so much to everyone who came to our Food for Thought event in Asheville, North Carolina this past weekend. You can probably hear from my voice that I lost my voice a little. At least longtime listeners, you probably can. Too much excitement. It was wonderful meeting so many of you and hearing from amazing guests like chefs Katie Button, Chidi Kumar, and Ashley Shanti. We'll be airing that episode very soon, so stay tuned. And thank you to the folks at Kerrygold, the maker of beautiful Irish cheese and butter, for supporting our tour. And Asheville, by the way, is a very fun place to visit. Great restaurants, so many cool makers, and you're surrounded by the most beautiful mountains and scenery. You should plan a visit. Our next big event is Jubilee Seattle. We've got a great lineup planned for you, including chefs Renee Erickson, Makini Howell, and Rachel Yang. Talk about a supergroup. Allison Roman is flying in all the way from New York City, and we'll have lots of local luminaries there, including Linda Dershang and Aaron Goyoaga. We'll have lots of food and drink and great panels and talks. We cannot wait to celebrate the Pacific Northwest Bomb Squad. Tickets are on sale now at cherrybomb.com, and the event will be taking place Saturday, November 2nd, at Block 41. Speaking of Jubilee, for today's show, we're airing a conversation from Jubilee 2019 in New York City. It's a chat between Dory Greenspan and Joy Wilson, who many of you know and love as Joy the Baker. These powerhouse home bakers have so much wisdom to share when it comes to baked goods, careers, cookbooks, and more. Introducing them is Christina Ha, the co-owner and co-founder of Macaroon Parlor and Meow Parlor, right here in New York City. Dory just happens to be Christina's mentor. Christina shares her story of how baking changed her life, and we couldn't be happier to share it with you. Before we hear from Christina, here's a word from Le Cordon Bleu. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. And now, Christina Ha.
I'm so excited everyone came up to hear me talk. So my name's Christina. I have two main interests, cookies and cats. And I do both for a living. I have two bakeries called Macaroon Parlor, then there's Meow Parlor, New York's first cat cafe. And I throw the cat equivalent of this jubilee every year called Jackson Galaxy's Cat Camp. I'm a lucky person. I have a wonderful family, I have amazing friends, I have great employees, and I've helped over 500 cats find homes. Oh. However, things weren't always this way. The loneliest period of my life was about 10 years ago. I'm not sure what I was looking for when I moved to New York, but I knew I was afraid to stay in the suburbs and afraid that I would just settle. As a teenager, I didn't know what settling was. I didn't know if it meant fulfilling the dreams of my immigrant parents by becoming a lawyer, or if it was choosing a path because it seemed easy. I don't know what or why, but I had felt uneasy for a very long time, so I just kept busy. I graduated college in 3.5 years, then went back to school to get an associate's, and then back to school to learn how to sew. Instead of pursuing higher education, I was just signing up for school for the sake of filling my time. I took internships and eventually jobs at my dream companies, only to look around one day and wonder why I didn't fit in. I'm an introvert who felt so uncomfortable in a city of 8 million people that I was sinking into myself. It was my mom who encouraged me to sign up for my first baking class. At that point, she knew I would never be a doctor or a lawyer, and she knew what unhappiness looked like. She told me that when I was in preschool, we had a weekly baking class, and it was my favorite thing in the world. She knew I was lonely then, too, partly because I didn't speak a lot, partly because I didn't understand what people were saying, and partly because I constantly felt like an other. But food has no language barriers, and it was my favorite part of the school week. So as an adult, I started to take baking classes. Over time, late nights of anxiously waiting for the night to end and the next workday to begin turned into hours spent on the floor with my feet propped up against the oven, watching breads rise, cookies caramelize, and magic happen. Finally, something felt right. I'd spent so long chasing a shadow that I never stopped to look at what was in front of me, that in a city with thousands of restaurants, fast casual joints, and cafes, that the thing that made me happiest could be a career. I went all in. I used the recession as an excuse to shrug and say that the desk job wasn't going anywhere anyway. Within a year, I was in pastry school, met my now husband, who's over there, and we started Macaron Parlor. But anyone who has opened a business knows that the first few years are still lonely. You don't have time to socialize because you're understaffed. You're afraid to step out because your place might burn down in the 15 minutes you're gone. And you go to sleep so late that you wake up tired. But that kind of loneliness didn't hurt. I had a purpose, and it was tangible, and things felt right. During this period, I didn't have many friends, but I had the internet. I used to write about my life, about owning a business, and the things I was learning. I didn't write for an audience. I wrote because for the first time in a long time, I had a lot to say, and so I wrote into the abyss of the internet. Much to my surprise, it spoke back. If you love that New York has a cat cafe, it only exists because my business partner sent me a fan letter 5 years ago. And I was so touched that I hired her to work in my kitchen. Someone who works for me now read my blog when she was in pastry school. Last month, someone from Australia messaged me to say that she thought of me recently because she's starting her own business. I haven't written for many years now because I'm not lonely. But there are still people out there looking. It made me realize that we're all looking for some connection. It's what makes us alive. Dory understood this years ago, before we had Twitter and Instagram, that while food is a necessity, it's so much more than that. It's about people. It's about connecting with others, about memories and experiences. Her cookbooks were the first I had ever read that included stories about a recipe. 13 cookbooks in, Dory has invited people all over the world into some of the greatest kitchens, and more recently, into her own kitchen. I first found her through her World Peace cookies, named because they are good enough to bring world peace. Then there was Tuesdays with Dory, where people connected with each other from their own homes by blogging about her recipes. Entire communities sprung out of Dory's writing, and everyone who participated had their own story to tell. She helped people create memories. Today, we have so many more tools at our grasp to allow us to stay in touch, to meet new people, to double tap, or swipe right. We can invite people to peek into our kitchens with photos taken on a phone, or quite literally, like Joy, invite people to cook beside us in our actual kitchen. Joy is one of those people who figured out a way to combine storytelling, food, and the desire to connect both on and off screen using these new tools. She gets it. I wouldn't be surprised if that's helping out someone who is lonely today. Food has stories to tell, people to feed, And I look forward to listening to these women talk about their careers, the human element of food, and how social media has impacted the landscape from their first cookbook to now. Dory was one of the first people I met in the food industry. I was her first mentee in a mentorship program, and for years she sent me words of encouragement. Every few months I would get an email from her about something she saw that she wanted to share, or to see if I was practicing self-care, or just to send some love. Dory was one of my first friends as an adult, and she claimed she had nothing to teach me. That's b****. She may not know this, but much of what I've learned from her has shaped the entirety of my career. So with that off my chest, I'm so happy for everyone here to listen to the magic to come, because I know it's going to be so beautiful. Thank you.
I'm going to start off my conversation with Dory today by telling her a story. So I was saying in 2006, I was working as a baker in two bakeries. I was Enjoy the Baker. So it was funny that I was a baker in two bakeries because I was an enthusiastic home baker. And I had finagled my way into two baking jobs because I realized that if you like to bake and you will get to work at 3:30 in the morning, you're hired. You know? So I would get to work at 2:30 in the morning and start baking because a lot of times I would mess things up and have to throw them away. So then at 3:30, when real bakers came in, I'd be like, hey guys, just starting fresh. Just here, ready. That happened a lot. I ruined so much chocolate mousse. Okay, I'll get to it.
Wait, I'm imagining you in this bakery, like coming prepared with extra black bags to throw away.
Yes.
Right?
And after I would get off of work, I would go home. On the way home, there was a bookstore. And in the bookstore was your Baking From My Home to Yours book. And I couldn't afford to buy it, but I would sit in the aisle and copy down a few recipes, word for word. No, it's no problem. And then I would take the notebook to the bakery at 2:30 in the morning and try some of your recipes. And what was
that wasn't the one that didn't work, was it?
No.
The mousse that you, no.
They always worked. And what was so wonderful to me about that book is that your technique was so helpful, but it was written from the perspective and from the heart of a home baker. And so I could take it to this new job in a place where I was making friends with my fear, and I got so much comfort and skill from it, and I bought the book. I eventually could afford it. I had to save up, but
the mother in me is thinking, if only I had known this, I would have sent you the book.
Dory, don't do that. People need to buy books. So I wanted to tell you that story and then ask you.
Thank you.
Ask you how your kitchen journey started and what were the books that maybe you held close to your chest as you were embarking on your journey from home baker to professional person?
From home baker to home baker.
Yeah, really.
I am a home baker. I worked with Julia. I'm not answering your question, but I will.
Cool.
Okay. So I had the amazing, amazing good fortune to work with Julia Child in the 90s. I wrote Baking with Julia, which was the book that accompanied her TV series. And we would shoot every day. And one day Julia said, I want to play hooky. Will you play hooky with me? And so I still have it, a little Miata, which is like a car the size of a jelly bean.
Hold on. Right? You have a Miata?
A red one.
A red one?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a convertible, but Julia, you couldn't take the top down because her hair, right? And Julia had size 12 or 13 feet, and so I kind of had to plead her to get her into the car. But this isn't the story I want to tell you. So Julia said, let's play hooky. I origami her into the car. Her idea of hooky is going to the supermarket. And so we're shopping around. She's helping people choose a good melon. And at some point, she turned to me and she put her arm around me, and she's 6 feet tall, and she said, you know, we make such a good team. And I was really touched. And she said, we make a good team because we're just a couple of home bakers. And even after all that Julia had done and all that she had taught all of us, she really thought of herself as a home baker. And I have never stopped thinking of myself that way. And so I burnt my parents' kitchen down when I was 12. I'm going to do this very quickly. I wasn't allowed to bake. I got married when I was 19. I'm still married to Michael Greenspan. And I learned to cook and bake because I learned to cook because I had to. And I learned to bake because I really wanted to. And my book, the book that is tattered and has spots, I thought they were chocolate. I have no idea what they are. They're all over the place. Is Maida Heater. She was my, does anybody know Maida Heater?
Yeah.
So she was my hero. Everything I made from her books worked. Her directions were so precise. Yeah. When I started writing about food, I had Maida in my head. Mm-hmm. She taught me to bake. Yeah.
What is your favorite thing of hers to bake? Do you have a favorite?
She had a lemon cake in her first book that I made it every year for our son's teachers for their Christmas gift. I made it for potlucks. I made it for everything. And when the paperback version came out, that recipe wasn't there. Mm. And one book later, she wrote and she said, here's my revised version. She said, I can't figure out why it didn't work, but people started writing to her. This was writing, and it didn't work. And she retested it, and she claimed that it didn't work because there were demons in her kitchen.
Well, I live in New Orleans, and...
Oh, there are demons everywhere.
Demons and ghosts are everywhere.
Yeah, so I learned to bake from Maida Heater, from Gaston Lanotte, when he's now dead, but I think of him as the father of modern pastry. And when his book was first translated into English, that was my book. Do you write in your cookbooks?
Do I write my own cookbooks?
No, I know you do.
Yes. Yeah, I do write in my cookbooks, yeah. I make notes. I have my first cookbook I got when I was 12 years old. It was like one of those paperback church cookbooks. And in it, every time I made a certain recipe, I would write the date and write my thoughts about it. Open journaling in my cookbook. Mm. And I still have that book. It has lots of notes.
So my mother didn't bake. When my parents moved to Florida, my mother called me. She was so excited. She had two ovens. And I said, but you don't cook or bake? She said, more storage. So I never had. I didn't have a cookbook until I got married. And it was the New York Times cookbook. It was my first book.
What was food like for your family when you were growing up?
So my father owned a supermarket, so there was plenty of food. Nobody ever wanted to cook it. And so we had a housekeeper, and the housekeeper cooked. I don't remember my mother cooking. I have no memories of my mother cooking or my father. I have no favorite dishes from childhood. And I think that now, as I look back, it seemed perfectly normal to me. I didn't know, I didn't know anything else. But I realize as I think back on how important it was for me to make a home when we got married, and that for me, home meant being at the table, having friends at the table. Mm-hmm. I think it came from a kind of deprivation in a way. But it wasn't, but I was happy. I didn't know,
I hear you. But you want, it's like a way of nurturing. You are building a way of nurturing your relationships and romantic and friendship and everything.
I don't know. I'm sure I didn't know what I was doing, but boy, I'm glad I did. I mean, because it is. It is about having, I think it's through food that we make relationships and that we make memories that last. In case you didn't hear me, like, singing happy birthday from the rooftops yesterday, our son turned 40 yesterday, and it was birthday cake, and it was looking at pictures of him blowing out, you know, 2 candles, 3 candles, 20 candles, making the same cake that I've made for him for years and years and years.
What is that cake?
So it's a chocolate cake. I've tweaked it a little bit to make it a little less sweet. It's a dark chocolate cake it's a buttermilk cake, and it's got chocolate frosting. And it can hold lots more than 40 candles. So I'll be making it.
You're ready. I have a lot of questions I want to ask you, but since we're talking about birthday cakes, do you make your own birthday cake?
No. Do you?
Yes.
Is that because you don't trust anybody else
Correct.
To do a good one?
So who makes your birthday cake, and what is it?
It's interesting. I was so set on, it's not interesting, it's just, it is. I was so set on having traditions because I didn't grow up with them. But I have no particular birthday cake.
No. Okay.
I mean, Joshua has his chocolate cake, mm-hmm. but no.
Okay, I want to ask you about food writing, because I think you are such a beautiful food writer. How did you transition from your work in the kitchen to writing about food?
I started as a writer. So I went to graduate school. I'm all but dissertation for a doctorate in gerontology, the study of aging, about which I can tell you more now than I could have when I was in graduate school. And I worked in a research center for many years writing. And I was very lucky. I worked for someone who really encouraged me to write and who was a good editor. And I never saw the separation between developing recipes and writing. To me, writing the recipe instructions was a form of creative writing. It was a way of imagining somebody in the kitchen, imagining talking to them. It was a conversation for me, so it always felt like writing. It always felt like I was talking to the person who would be following my recipes. So that was, I had an odd experience. A friend of mine, a colleague friend, was going to an awards nomination, and a book of mine, it was the Baking with Julia book, had just been published, and she said to me, "I hope you don't get nominated." And when I could catch my breath, I said, "What are you saying?" And she said, "Well, all you did was write the book."
Oh.
And I've thought about, that's 20 some odd years ago, and I always think about that, because I think about, what is it about, is a cookbook just the recipes? Is a cookbook is something you write. Do we think about the importance of writing when it's instructional? I think of it as a whole piece, and it never occurred to me that being just the writer was anything less than being. So I think about this a lot. I think that I would love to see cookbooks thought about as books,
yeah,
as well as cookbooks.
As pieces of writing. There is so much personality that goes into the, even just the instructional part of a cookbook. It's unique to its writer.
Yeah, I mean, you have a very particular way of writing your recipes. It's our voice. It's,
yeah.
Right?
And yeah, it's instruction and pep talk and like walking people back from the cliff, you know? It's like, no,
particularly
it's,
with baking.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Very much.
We'll be right back with Dory Greenspan and Joy the Baker after this quick break. If you're a serious foodie, you need to know about Traeger wood-fired grills. You can do things you never thought possible on a grill, like baking. You can bake some smoky chocolate brownies, a classic cherry pie, or a stone fruit galette. And if you're on the Bomb Squad, you know it's all about the galette this season. Of course, you can grill, barbecue, roast, and smoke your favorite meats, veggies, and fruit. Yes, fruit. If you haven't grilled a pineapple, you don't know what you're missing. Before I learned about Traeger, I was never that intrigued by grilling. I had only ever been around charcoal grills and gas grills with those annoying propane tanks you have to return. I just wasn't that into it. But with a Traeger, you get signature wood-fired flavor and more heat control, so you can do some high-quality cooking. And if the aesthetics of your backyard are important to you, these are some seriously beautiful pieces of equipment. So when it comes to your next grilling adventure, try it on a Traeger. Visit TraegerGrills.com to learn more. And now, back to Dory and Joy at Jubilee.
So in working, I would love to hear more about your time working with Julia and what it was like to work on that book.
So I had met Julia in 1991 when my first book came out. It was my first time ever in front of people. I was the kid in the back of the room because I didn't want to raise my hand. But when my book was published, I had to actually get out into the world and like make sure somebody other than my mother, who I knew would never use it, would buy it. And so I was invited to give a demo at BU, and on that program was Julia and Jacques Pepin and me. And Julia befriended me at that. I mean, she saw a lonely, scared young woman, and she kind of took me around. And we kept in touch, and when she was working on this book, she asked if I would write it. But I had just started working for the Food Network, and I was in show business, and I said no. I said, I'm not writing anymore. I'm a producer. This is my new life. And after about 6 months, I realized how much I missed writing. And I called and said, who's writing your book? And she said, we haven't found anybody.
It's you.
Yeah, I mean, I almost missed that opportunity. She is everything that you, the Julia that you see on television is the Julia that you see all the time. She was so smart, so funny, so curious about everything. Her computer broke. And my husband was up while we were shooting, and she said, Michael, go upstairs, see what you can do with it. And he was petrified that he was going to like ruin Julia's computer. But he went upstairs, and he turns around, and Julia's there. And he said, Julia, I'm working on it. I'll call. She said, no, I want to see what you're doing. You're not always going to be here. I want to learn how to do this. She wanted to learn everything. She called me one morning. She said, do you have a bread machine? I said, no. She said, aren't you interested? I said, not really. She said, you should be. I'm getting one today, and you should too. She was really an intellectual. She really studied everything. She knew the history of things. She wanted to know everything. When she wanted to teach people. If you've never read a book called, if you're interested in Julia, if you've never read a book called As Always, Julia. Mm-hmm. It's the letters that she wrote to Avis DeVoto, who helped her get Mastering the Art of French Cooking published. You get to see the way she worked, how important every detail was to her, how she wouldn't let anything go. It had to be right. She kept polishing. She kept working. Mm-hmm. Her work habits were extraordinary, her commitment. And I took away from working with her that kind of focus and how much you have to demand of yourself to do good work.
Another through line with that feels like a constant curiosity.
Always, yeah.
Which is required to push yourself forward and better. What are you curious about outside of food?
I'm sorry, what am I curious?
What are you curious about? Like, what do you...
Oh, like, I'm curious about all of you. Like, I just, like, I want to know everything about, like, where you got started, you know, what you want to do, how you make things work. I'm curious about people. I'm in love with Paris. I've been lucky enough to live there as a part-timer for 20 years, but every time I go, like, I want to learn something new. I want to eventually know how to cut a pyramid-shaped cheese properly. Yeah. It's mostly people, though.
People.
It's people. You?
What am I curious about?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, so much. Every year I try to take on a new curiosity because I don't know how long I'll get to be in the world, you know? So I just like, every year, let's try a new thing. Last year was yoga. This year, I'm learning how to sew. And, 2 years ago was paper flowers.
I love it.
So, you know, just like dip into, I think that working outside of food also helps feed my creative work in food.
I think that breathing helps fuel, there's something about just being out in the world, being aware of what's around you. You find inspiration absolutely everywhere. A quick, almost non-related story. I did a book signing years and years ago with Pierre Hermé, the Paris pastry chef. We had written a book together. And a woman came up and she had a little baby. And Pierre smiled and kind of chucked the baby under the chin and said, "What's the baby's name?" And the mother said, "Celeste." And he said, "That's a beautiful name." And then he took his notebook out and he wrote it down. And I said, "What are you going to do with it?" He said, "I don't know. It's just a very beautiful name." And about 5 years later, he created an entire pastry collection and called it Celeste.
Oh my God.
So you never know where something is going to come from, where an idea will come from. Sometimes I see a color and yeah. It makes me think I can make a dessert from it.
That's really beautiful. Can I ask you about Paris? Can I ask you about, I know you live in Paris, also Connecticut, also New York?
Yep.
Okay, casual. what parts of Paris do you find you bring back to your American kitchens, and what parts of like cooking in the States do you take back to Paris?
So I probably do more cooking in Paris than I do any place else. And I think it's because it's so easy to have people over. I don't know why. Nobody seems busy in Paris. You can, you say, "Hi, I'd like, you know, I'm going to the market tomorrow. Do you want to come for dinner?" And people say yes. In New York, it's like, "Could you go to the market in 6 weeks and invite?" I mean, it just takes too long. So it's really ingredients that inspire me, that make me think, you know, I've kind of never know what I'm going to cook until I'm out there, you know, looking around. I love to cook some American food in France for my French friends. So I like to do like burgers for a whole dinner and put out different things that people can mix and match. They never do. The French would, you know, like, my French friends would like me to either give them the food exactly as I want them to, or they will just like line it up very, very beautifully. So I'll often do, you know, some American things in Paris and have fun with that. I used to literally bring back ingredients. I don't any longer because everything is available. But I sometimes feel the first week that I'm in Paris, I feel like my head is exploding. I feel like there's like something in the air that makes you have a trillion ideas.
Mm. It's that spot for you.
It's that.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's that spot. There was a connection. It's the first time I put my foot down on the sidewalk in Paris, I thought, my mother had me in Brooklyn when she could have had me here.
So rude.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brooklyn was not hip and groovy then.
I feel that way about New Orleans. And also in New Orleans, people will come to dinner. They aren't as busy. They make time. What did I want to ask you next? Oh, I want to talk about...
I'll help you.
Thank you.
Tell me about your cooking school. You do this at home, right?
Yeah, I do. I have a cooking school in New Orleans. It's called the Bakehouse, and it's a double shotgun. So half of the house is my studio, and it's a giant open kitchen where 12 people come three or four times a month to learn how to cook with me.
Children? Ever children?
No children. I don't know about them. You know? I just don't. It's true.
I knew about one.
Yeah.
I knew about one.
Don't know what they can do, what they can't do. You know, I just... So no. Adults. Yeah. But it's a really wonderful way to bring, you know, my work, my creative work on the internet into real life, which is what I feel like we need.
You know, real life is not... Wait. I was going to say real life is not underrated, but it's real life is not overrated, right?
Depends on what you're trying to say. No.
Real life is great.
It's That's so what, good.
Right. It's lonely out there in cyberspace sometimes.
Yeah, I think we have kind of reached the peak of what we can do only on the internet.
Okay,
we
need... I said that, but I really... Because I'm not a millennial, because I'm not a native digital person, because I started working, my husband just found my proposal for my dissertation, and it's on, I miss that paper, that kind of speckly, onion skinny paper that I used to type my proposal on. But because I'm essentially old, I'm excited by the internet. When it arrived, I couldn't believe that there were all of these people out there that I could learn about. The first time I saw somebody post a picture of something that they've made from one of my books, I started to cry. I called my husband and because as a writer before the internet, you sat at home and you wrote. And you didn't know who was out there. You just sent your work out, and every once in a while you would meet someone, maybe, who knew something about what you were doing. You had no sense that there was no way that the work came back to you and that you could see the reaction. And I have never stopped being excited about the internet because I feel it does bring us together in a way where we can share what we know, we can learn from one another. And I got to see someone make that chocolate cake.
In 2008, I was a part, my blog had just started, and I was a part of Tuesdays with Dory.
You were?
Oh, girl, yes. yeah, and so every Tuesday, there were maybe 50 of us on the internet. We would bake one of your recipes from your baking book and post it every Tuesday, and it was such a beautiful way to have community on the internet.
I'm still in touch with a bunch of the Tuesdays. So this was a group that was started by a woman whom I've never met in Pittsburgh. She wrote to me and said, I just got your cookbook. I'd like to bake my way through it with two of my friends, and we're going to blog, just the three of us. Is that okay? And this was 2007, and I didn't know what okay meant because I didn't know what the internet meant. And I thought, this is great. And I remember going to a conference a year later and having people saying to me, aren't you afraid it will hurt your book sales? Do you want your recipes all over the internet? Do you want... And I thought, yeah, I do. I do. I want these people to be baking and sharing what they know. And I think I was right.
You were right.
I think I was right.
You're
yeah.
also very generous.
No, because I think it's just, it doesn't, it's the opportunity for people. Okay, I'm going to preach. Do I have a second to preach? I'm just going to tell you
minutes.
How I, okay, I'm just going to tell you how I feel about baking in case you don't know. I feel that baking is magic. I feel that when, and this is, I felt it from the start, that we're transforming ingredients with our hands, more so than in cooking. I mean, when you make a steak, you look at the steak, you cook it, it looks like a steak. But with baking, everything you do is a transformation, is magical, it changes. With the same ingredients, you can make 1,000 things, and you make it with your hands, and you make it to share with someone, because even I don't bake for myself. It's always meant to be shared. And there's a sense of satisfaction of having made something from start to finish yourself. And so when I saw people out in wherever internet people are, you know, baking and writing about the fact that they had made these recipes and talking about whether they, you know, served them to their family or they took them to a potluck dinner or it was part of a church reception, or a woman who sent me a picture that she had made all of the desserts for her brother's wedding. This was extraordinary
to
me.
And I think people who share in the magic with you.
It's, but I think this is what food is about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We only have a few minutes left, and I really must get this piece of information from you. It's a question I like to ask anyone I can. So the question is, it's two parts. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received? And what is the best piece of advice you've ever given?
I think the best piece of advice I ever got, and Sophia said it as well, is the same piece of advice that I give.
Okay.
And that's say yes even when you're terrified.
Always.
Yeah. I mean, you worked as a baker and you said you had, right? I worked as a baker when I had, I got fired very quickly, but but I briefly worked as a baker when I had no experience and all I had was the desire, this is what I wanted to do. And I mean, even going to that demo where I met Julia, I was so scared, but I knew I had to say yes. And so, the same piece of advice given and taken.
It's making friends with the fear and pushing yourself. And just so you don't feel alone, I've also been fired from two baker jobs. Oops.
I was fired for it. It took me years to realize how fabulous the reason that I was, what is it, the cause? Whatever she said I was fired for was really a great thing. I was fired for creative insubordination.
Amazing.
It's pretty great. It took me years. It took me years. Yeah, I changed the recipe and didn't tell anyone.
You are perfect. Thank you, Dori. It's such a pleasure and honor.
Thank you, Avery.
That's it for today's show. If you want to see what Jubilee is all about, tickets are on sale right now for our Jubilee Seattle conference, taking place Saturday, November 2nd at Block 41. We would love to see you there. Thank you to today's sponsors, Traeger Wood-Fired Grills and Le Cordon Bleu Culinary Schools. Don't forget, we would love if you could support the Hunger Doesn't Take a Break initiative from the Food Bank for New York City. Visit foodbanknyc.org for more. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Media. Our show is edited, engineered, and produced by the one and only Jess Seidman. Cherry Bomb is powered by Lauren Goldstein, Audrey Payne, Kia Damone, Donna Yen, Maria Sanchez, and our publisher, Kate Miller Spencer. Our theme song is All Fired Up by the band Tra La La. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hi, my name is Mayumi, and I'm the chef and partner at the Club Car Restaurant. Do you want to know who I think is bomb? I think Jessica Coslow of Squirrel in Los Angeles is the bomb because she's a badass and truly authentic to herself. In cooking food that is so personal, craveable, and simply delicious in the comfortable setting of Squirrel, she's changed the dialogue and elevated the standard on what we think of the American breakfast and lunch. I embrace her philosophy that the food you make should be what you want to eat every day.